Hello and welcome to Clinicians Brief, the podcast, the conversations behind the content. I'm your host, Dr. Alyssa Watson, and today we're going to be talking and doing a little DIY crafting with veterinary professor and surgeon, Dr. Karen Tobias. Dr. Tobias wrote an article for the January-February 2021 issue of Clinicians Brief entitled Coaptation Devices for Elbow Hygromas, which details how to construct an external coaptation device for a large dog out of a pool noodle. And since summer's in full swing and every dollar store in town has a giant bin of pool needles out front, I actually made one of these prior to our conversation today. So hi, Dr. Tobias, welcome.
Hi.
So before we get up to our elbows in today's topic, if you will, could you tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up as a professor of surgery at the University of Tennessee?
Sure. I graduated from University of Illinois and did an internship at Purdue and a master's and surgery residency at Ohio State. And then I taught at Washington State University for a while. And then a position came open here at Tennessee, and I heard that people were really friendly here, and I came here almost 22 years ago.
Oh, so it sounds like you
friendly here.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like you did find them friendly and decided to stay. That's wonderful. So for my experiment this morning, I did enlist the help of my dog Day Bordeaux Luna. She's 6.5 years old and just under 100 pounds. Luckily, she's never had an elbow hygroma herself, but I still thought that she would make the perfect model. And frankly, I think she probably preferred this task to the times I take her into the clinic and let all the new hires practice venipuncture on her. So it was kind of a win-win.
Poor Luna.
Poor Luna. She's such a good-hearted soul. So can you walk us through a brief review of hygromas? What are they? Which patients are usually affected?
Most of the time when we see hygromas, it's going to be the younger, like 6 month to 2 year old, large or giant breed dogs. And it tends to be those dogs that like to flop down on concrete or other hard surfaces. My guess is that probably those dogs that get overheated easily are going to be victims of this condition more often, simply because they tend to spread out on the concrete or the linoleum or wherever. And so what ends up happening is as those pressure points hit the ground, as they're dropping their bodies down, it makes like a little callus, a little pillow in that area. But unfortunately, sometimes with chronic trauma, you can get a fluid pocket. And if it gets really bad, they'll get granulation tissue or ulcerations. And so sometimes it's just a non-painful callus or a non-painful little swelling, but other times it gets quite large or even opens up and drains.
Okay. Yeah. And certainly that is very concerning for clients. That's when we get a call and they bring them in, you know, right away. But even the ones that aren't open, I feel, and ulcerating, you know, when they can get some, you know, quite dramatic swellings. And obviously clients are really concerned, so they bring them in. What other treatment options besides external coaptation are there, especially for those ulcerated ones or you know, the larger hygromas?
Well, if they're closed but really large, or if they're painful, then besides taking the pressure off of those areas, it may be something where we have to surgically drain them or even excise them. If they're open and ulcerated, before we do anything, we first want to investigate why are they ulcerated. If there's an infection there, we want to get a good culture, which is going to mean a surgical scrub and a tissue sample. We also might need to consider things like x-rays, radiographs of the elbows, just to see, is there any underlying disease? And I've had a few older dogs who presented with these conditions, and it turns out to be a tumor. And so it can be something like that. Maybe chronic trauma is going to stimulate tumors as well. So In any of those situations, we want to first find out if there's any other issues we have to deal with, whether it's an infection or neoplasia or anything like that. And then options might be something like a Penrose drain placement, which just have some complications, or even surgical resection. And so surgical resection can be a bit risky if you don't know specifically how to do it, because any time that there are incisions and sutures over those pressure points, they're going to have trouble healing. But the surgery can be quite successful. And in one of the papers with surgical excision, they didn't have any recurrences. My guess is in those papers, they were able to treat the dogs properly so that they could prevent them from recurring, because you have to have a dog that not only heals, but then doesn't go back to flopping down on hard surfaces. So trying to retrain those dogs or to provide them with cushioning is going to be just as important with these other types of procedures.
Got it. So even if you did have a hygroma that needed surgical correction, having, you know, this kind of external coaptation possibly after surgery would still be appropriate, it sounds like.
Right. And that's actually one of the reasons why we were developing this. It's not just what happened with COVID last year and trying to counsel everybody, but it was also the fact that veterinarians tend to use donut bandages all the way around the hygromas after they've done surgery or drainage or whatever they've done. And 360 degree pressure is going to decrease the blood supply in that area. And I was just seeing delays in these things healing and getting better. And so we decided, well, let's find a way that we can elevate the animals, but not have pressure all the way around the hygroma. And this worked out well.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll get into how to make this device for the audience, and we'll kind of explain it for them, although they can certainly go to cliniciansbrief.com and check out the article. There's fantastic pictures and a very detailed step-by-step. And I'll tell you, it was so easy. It really was quite quick and easy. I was thrilled with that. So you had a very nice list of supplies. And so I went out and I found a pool noodle quickly. Although I will tell you, we are in the middle of this horrendous heat wave here in the West. It's just been awful. And so I thought there'd be more, but the pool noodles were kind of picked over. And so I didn't get my choice of color.
So it really bothers Luna.
But so I got a pool noodle, and then I just had a pair of scissors. I had a measuring tape here at home. I found a marker, and I do a little sewing and crafting. So I had some Velcro tape in my sewing kit, but it looks like you can use Velcro straps. What are some of the other things that you can use to strap this device onto the limb?
Yep, you had some straps that had buckles on them. That would be fine. Initially, when I was using these, I was using a self-adhesive wrap that you might use on top of bandages or athletic tape. But the author, Jessica Montoya, the other author for this paper, came up with the idea of the Velcro straps. And I thought, well, that makes a lot more sense because, one, it's reusable, so it saves some money. And two, you don't have to try and find something special, and it doesn't tear up the noodle when you try and rip it off. So
right.
And that brilliant addition.
Yeah. And made it very easily adjustable. So I did have also a little strap like with buckles on it, very similar to like how a muzzle buckles, you know? And so I tried that as well. And I found that was a little easier than the Velcro tape. When I did them, just kind of keeping your eye out for things that might, work for this, because lots of different things work. You had also suggested in the article using a stockinette, if they're underneath the device, if there's, ulcerated lesions. I did not have a stockinette. And while I am of the age that I remember pantyhose and stuff, I don't actually have any of those anymore. So I did skip the stockinette. But are there other padding choices, things, padding options that are out there that we should be considering? How much padding do we need underneath this device? The pool noodle itself seems very cushiony.
Right. I think that the main reason for using the stockinette is to keep the pool noodle clean and to stop the pool noodle from directly rubbing against any ulcerated elbows. And so you don't want to get blood all over the pool noodle. And so this will protect it. Now, I haven't had any outdoor dogs use this, but I could imagine wanting a full stockinette to pull down over the pool noodle if you have a dog that goes outside and throws itself in the dirt, because then you don't have to change the pool noodle, you just have to change the stockinette. So I think the materials really depend on whether or not the wound is open or if it's just a big fluid swelling. If it's an open wound, then you need to choose some type of material that doesn't have lint, that doesn't have fluff to it. So if you think about some of the cotton turtlenecks or some of the little girls' leggings or things like that, those would be pretty lint-free, and so you wouldn't have to worry about them putting things in the wound. But if you have a pool noodle that's kind of loose on the animal, and the animal doesn't have an open wound on the elbow or wherever you're placing this, then you could use other types of material, something thicker, nice wool socks or something like that, and that would give them a little bit more cushion so that the noodle wouldn't move around quite as much.
Right. I did notice that when we were placing, and we'll talk a little bit more, I think probably in the episode about, you know, fitting it and making sure that it's not slipping. But before we can get there, I actually had to make it. So I had to measure Luna's forelimb. So can you tell the audience, what are the landmarks you use when measuring, when you're making this device?
Yeah, we're going from just proximal to the carpal pad all the way up to just distal to the hygroma, if you're talking about an elbow hygroma, because you don't want to be putting any pressure on either the carpal pad or the hygroma itself. And also, by making the pool noodle smaller than those two structures, that actually stops the noodle from shifting back and forth. And I haven't seen any problems with animals getting abraded by these, but I imagine if you had one that was really loose and shifting up and down a lot, but that's a possibility. Or maybe it would just annoy the dog enough that it would want to bother the pool noodle. So something that fits in between those two structures would be good.
Perfect. And Luna's leg was about 7 inches. I went just below her elbow because she doesn't have a hygroma, like I mentioned, and all the way to her carpal pad. That was 7 inches. She is quite stocky, you know, because she's a dog de Bordeaux. So she has that mastiff kind of body type as opposed to the real lanky Great Dane or maybe, you know, Golden Doodle. And the pool noodle that I used was, I think, about 2.5 inches in diameter. And so I cut that to the 7 inches, and then I just snipped it lengthwise along like a hot dog bun. And that, I think, is an important part, as you were saying, so that we don't have, you know, 360 pressure around, correct?
Right. And it's a lot easier if it just has the one slit, because that does tend to keep it wrapped around the leg. Whereas if you were trying to split it in half, which we do sometimes for casts, but not for pool noodles, it's a little harder to put it on and keep it on if you have a dog that tries to run away from you. So when you put this thing on, it just stays on if you've only slid it longitudinally in one spot. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think probably if I had to do it again, I might look for a little larger pool noodle. I know they come in kind of bigger sizes for her, just because her leg was so stocky. It ended up only going not quite halfway around her limb. And so I don't think that was quite enough. So what do you think about that?
I was going to say, if you have one that is a little bit too wide, you can actually cut another piece of pool noodle and slide it in there, or some pipe insulation or something like that to kind of complete that circle. The main thing is that sometimes if you bend the pool noodle too much, it's just going to split. And other times, if you get any wrinkles in there, you don't want that causing any irritation to the dog. So you might have to think about some sort of padding. But unfortunately, it seems like the inner diameter of these is pretty standard for the pool noodles. So yeah, sometimes we do go to pipe insulation.
Okay.
And pipe insulation, you might have to stack together several layers of it to make sure that when they lay down, their hygroma is up above the ground.
Okay. And so do you keep all these supplies like in the clinic? Do you have the owners get them and bring them to you? That was kind of popped into my mind too. Like, who's getting these things?
we have a swimming pool in our clinic, and we use the pool noodles for the dogs that are in the swimming pool and for the people who are in the pool with the dogs in the pool. And so I sometimes just sneak down there and take pool noodles if I need one. And so, yeah, we keep them in the hospital. And then the good news is that it is pretty easy to teach the owners how to make these as well. So thank goodness I'm not stealing all their pool noodles.
The rehab dogs are looking for their pool noodles.
Where's my noodle? I don't know.
You make hundreds of clinical decisions a day. Make them confidently with the help of Clinician's Brief algorithm collection. More than 100 easy-to-follow management trees designed by veterinary experts are available to help you consider all of the differentials and narrow your diagnosis. Order your copy at cliniciansbrief.com/algorithms. So this would have brought me to the point, I was getting ready to fit the device onto Luna, and that had brought me to the point where if she had the open wound and had the stockinette, I would have placed it on her limb. The stockinette, it sounds like, needs to be quite a bit bigger than the length of the pool noodle so that you can bend it over, or like you said, it can provide protection from dirt and dust, things like that. But it can also be laundered. So how often do you know, how many of these should we be sending home with clients? How often should they be changing it, laundering it?
Yeah, I think I would send home 2 or 3 with the client. And that way, if they need to make more, then they can be inventive and go to the dollar store and look at socks or something like that. But it's just going to have to be laundered whenever it gets dirty. And so the worrisome thing is if you have an open ulcerated wound, then I would have them changing this every day and washing them every day. And it's not like they have to put them through the washing machine. They can fill the sink with hot soapy water and clean it out really well and even use a little disinfectant into it and let it dry. But just so that they have a spare, one on and one drying. So I guess 3 sounds good. And then they can make others if they want. And of course, you can sell them more, but just make sure that you're charging for stockinette.
Sure.
It does cost money.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want to make sure that, you know, we're giving the clients the tools they need in order to, you know, change them and do a good job and keep infection at bay. So, let's see. So then I was ready to put the device on. I placed the pool noodle along the caudal aspect of her forelimb, and then I secured it with the straps that I made. Again, I had the Velcro straps, and then I also had one with a little buckle on it. I found that the buckle one was easier for me to adjust and get it kind of snug. I used just the 2 straps on Luna. Does that seem like, is that good, definitely having 2 straps? Do you use more? Have you ever used less? Like,
I like to use at least 2 straps because I think if you only use 1, then part of the pool noodle may pop open. And either that's going to put stress on the pool noodle or it's going to put uneven pressure on the leg. And we definitely don't want that. And so you have to have a strap at least at the top and the bottom. And if you had a really tall Great Dane, maybe you're going to need 3 straps in that case. But I think for most dogs, 2 straps is going to be sufficient.
Perfect. That's what I was thinking as well, but just wanted your opinion since you're the expert on this. So once I placed it on her, and Luna is a fairly chill dog, she just laid down. I found it easier to place it when she was laying down actually than when she was standing mm-hmm. up. But you know, again, she's pretty calm. When she was laying down, it was easy for me to find the place where, you know, once I got it in a good position, it elevated the elbow up where I could just, you know, not far, but at least a good, you know, half inch off the ground. I could like mm-hmm. slide my fingers underneath, you know, her elbow and it didn't touch the ground. So when a clinician in the practice or me, when I'm doing this, what should I be looking for right away to know that I've got a good fit or that I need to make adjustments?
I think number one is to make sure that hygroma is elevated off the ground, like you said, because if there is still contact with the ground, then it's not going to make any difference. I can imagine some of these really big dogs, that pool noodle is going to compress a little bit. It's pretty tough stuff, but it's still possible it can compress a little bit. So you do want to make sure that hygroma is going to stay elevated. And then the next thing would be if you had a pool noodle that was smaller in diameter than you wanted. So you've got a gap in there, and then you strap this on tightly. If you're starting to see any swelling, any tissue, any bulges protruding from the slit in that pool noodle, that would be a problem, that you've got it on too tightly. And then if the foot starts swelling, then that would be an issue as well. And these don't have to be on tight. It's all right if they move around a little bit. As far as I know, we put them on and we haven't had any animals that have gotten irritated by them, that have developed ulcerations by them. And so we're not worried that it's a tight fit. I think having something that it's a little loose, so that it's not swinging around, but you don't have to worry if the dog suddenly lays down on it. You don't have to worry if it does shift a little bit, because that way we don't have to worry about it pinching and causing swelling or anything like that. And we want the dog to be comfortable. If the dog is going after its foot or the dog's going after the pool noodle, then there's something wrong. Either the fit is bad or there's a smell to it that they don't like. But we haven't had any animals that haven't tolerated these. So I feel like as long as they're tolerating well, that's a good sign that they're comfortable.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because we've been sitting here talking now for 20 minutes or so, and she's been sleeping behind me with this thing on for an hour. So is that typical? Is she typical? Do most dogs react like that, or is she just a chill dog?
So far, that's been pretty typical. You'll see in the article that we had a dog that had hock hygromas that opened and ulcerated. And that dog did not want to get up and walk. And we made little pool noodle shoes for the dog so that whenever it walked, the hocks were up and above the ground, because this dog was walking plantigrade anyway. And the dog all of a sudden could walk. And it was just such a neat thing to see that, oh my gosh, I'm comfortable. So yeah, that's been our experience, is that they seem to be pretty comfortable with these. And I think that's very similar to the neoprene sleeves that you can get for dogs, where they wear those all the time so that they're not causing as much trauma. The big thing about that is it doesn't get their elbows up and off the ground quite as much. And so it's a good thing for preventative, but it's not necessarily as good for treatment.
Understandable. Yeah. And so, yeah, I had wondered that too, you know, adaptations to the device for dogs that do get the hygromas on the tarsus. So is it really just the same? Like, what are the landmarks for that? How do you adapt the device to put it on the hind limb?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. You're trying to find between the pad and the hygroma. It's a much smaller piece of pool noodle. And for smaller dogs, it may be more like pipe insulation, but yeah, just a little piece in that area. And for those cases, they've had wounds, and so I put bandages on them as well. But it is pretty fun to see them, because they're walking like they got little clogs on or something like that, and they're no longer painful because they're no longer slamming that portion of their heel into the ground. So it's pretty cool to see them so comfortable.
Yeah, that's great. I'm sure the owners are really happy too. Do you have like a handout that you send home with owners, or how do you, you know, besides the laundering and care, you know, what things are you telling owners to look for at home to make sure that we're not having an issue with the device?
I think it's important. We don't have a handout, first of all, but I do think it's important for them to take the pool noodles off every day. And so hopefully you're not going to have an animal that's wearing them forever, because at least in what little literature is available on elbow hygromas, it seems as if dogs tend to grow out of them. I don't know if it's like people, where if you walk barefoot enough, you get some calluses. Maybe that's what it is, but it does seem to be a younger dog's disease. And so what we hope is that they wear them for a while until the hygroma gets smaller and it becomes mature, and now it serves as a protective little coating.
Right. So when it matures, it's more like a callus. And
Right. And so hopefully at that point, they're not re-traumatizing themselves. It's not getting bigger. You don't have to do anything about it then, except still maybe provide some soft bedding that they don't want to lay in anyway.
Right. And in your experience, how long is that? Like, is that, are we talking, you know, weeks? Are we talking months? I suppose it probably depends.
Right. If you have smaller fluid pockets in that area, then it's going to be a couple of weeks. If it's an animal that has a very, very large fluid pocket, that may not go away with a system, because if it's walled off, that fluid may not get reabsorbed. And so it really is going to be very dependent on the animal and the situation. But certainly I would expect that if it's smaller pockets, that a couple of weeks will help the animal. But once you take them off, if they're starting to throw themselves on the concrete again, then it maybe they're going to have to either wear a device like this or some of the ones that you can purchase online commercially to provide them with a little bit of extra protection.
Yeah, and keep that on maybe a little bit longer. Well, it's super easy to make, and I think the clients can do it. And if it helps and helps them avoid, you know, something like an aggressive surgery, I think it's fantastic. So it was really fun. It was a really fun topic. It's a great article with beautiful pictures. It was easy to follow your step-by-step. And so I was hoping that you might want to have a little fun today and maybe play a quick game with me before we sign off.
Sure.
Okay. So this is just, it's very easy. I have a few kind of would you rather questions that I like to ask my guests. And then you just answer off the top of your head. There's no right or wrong answers. It's just for fun. So we'll dive right in. So would you rather have to go back in and retrieve a bladder stone that you left behind, or would you rather have to go back in and dig out a tooth root that fractured?
Bladder stone.
Bladder stone. All right. Would you rather have somebody say, wow, that vein is huge, or gee, it's been really quiet today?
It's been really quiet today.
Oh, you like to have chaos. Would you rather perform surgery on your own pet, or would you prefer a trusted colleague do it for you?
Trusted colleague.
And last question, if you had a veterinary superpower, would you rather have x-ray vision, or would you rather be able to hear what your patients were thinking?
X-ray vision. I don't want to hear what they're thinking. No. especially not if it's a cat.
Right, because they'd be judging you, right?
Yes.
So see, that wasn't that hard. Thanks for playing.
You're welcome.
Thanks again for taking the time to talk with us today. It was really a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for having me. And thank you, Luna.
She'll get a treat later, so she's excited.
Sounds good.
Thanks again to today's guest for joining us. And thank you for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. While you're there, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review us. You can also listen to our podcast on our website at cliniciansbrief.com/podcasts. Find us on Facebook and Twitter at Clinicians Brief, and on Instagram at clinicians.brief, or drop us a line at podcast@briefmedia.com. Clinicians Brief the Podcast is a Brief Media production, produced by Alexis Ussery, sound by Randall Stupka, and hosted by me, Dr. Alyssa Watson.